Welcome to the Future Christian Podcast, your source for insights and ideas on how to lead your church into the 21st century. At the Future Christian Podcast, we talk to pastors, authors, and other faith leaders for helpful advice and practical wisdom to help you and your community of faith walk boldly into the future. Now, here's your host, Lauren Richmond Jr.
Welcome to the Future Christian Podcast. This is Lauren Richmond Jr., and today I'm pleased to be joined by my guest host, co-host, Martha Tatarnik. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Thanks, Lauren. It's great to be here all season long. I listen to these conversations that you're having on Future Christian, and I just want to jump in and, you know, continue the conversation. So this is, hopefully our listeners feel that way too, and this is our opportunity to do that, keep the conversation rolling.
Yeah. Well, we have a special episode, an exciting episode planned here. We're going to try something new, and I think it'll be a great for our conversation for our listeners to kind of get a review of what the season was and then hear some highlights. So we're going to play some clips from episodes and then kind of just share about our thoughts. And, you know, especially Martha's going to share, she was not the one primary in the driver's seat for most of these, share some thoughts and responses and just kind of review and overview here. And as I'm talking, my dog is like shoving her head in my lap wanting petting. So such is the life of recording at home. Yes. So there's kind of three broad points here from my season. And I think really this is tends to be what a lot of my focused conversations are. And I think Martha, you tend to have a lot here of overlap here too. But three broad points we'll be talking about today is pastoral health, individualization versus connection, and then leading change. So we're going to start off with an interview I did at the Remind and Renew conference at my seminary, Phillips Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in January. And this is with Reverend Kinsey Tate. She's a licensed counselor and has a new program called Restore Clergy, where she's working especially with clergy to help clergy do better. So she's talking here just about some of the stuff that clergy have to deal with and how it can affect their ministry. So here we go. Let me get it going.
And especially if you're in a place of burnout, it's like that's what you're living in. And so you can feel hypocritical. You can feel like, how do I talk about a loving God when it's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this person in the pew reminds me of my dad who used to yell at me, and I am all kinds of triggered and I have no interest in being compassionate to them. Like that is fundamentally a human response.
Yeah.
And I think what's hard for clergy is like, we are expected to transcend that and to be able to like, you know, speak of God's loving kindness. And it's like, I'm not feeling it at all. You know, it's really hard to speak about it.
So I especially want to hear from you, Martha, on this, because I know you've been in a position where you've worked with a lot of younger leaders and you've been in positions, because you didn't officially become like a middle adjudicatory leader, but you were up for such a role, right? So I just want to hear your thoughts on how like clergy, their own stuff can often be a challenge in ministry.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to this clip and I just think I can't imagine that the relatability isn't felt like right across the North American church, like no matter what kind of congregation you're serving in, because it's such a theme in the conversations that we have on Future Christian. It's such a theme across the conversations that I have with colleagues. It is so easy to get into this job because you care about healing, but like we do it as wounded healers, right? Like we do it as people who bring our own needs and baggage, and we're negotiating a lot of really challenging aspects of the landscape that are not unrelated to the other categories that we shape our conversations into around navigating change and, you know, how we cope in an increasingly secular world. So it's, I think it's so easy for, if we don't kind of have those support systems in place and those honest conversations taking place, then it is so easy to just have all of our baggage drive the bus, you know?
Yeah. I like the way you said that. I mean, I don't like it, but I like it. That's a good way of saying it. Let our baggage drive the bus. What's
we're going to have the baggage. Right. We just don't want it to be in charge, right?
Oh, man. Yeah. What's what is a word of advice maybe that's been helpful for you or you've given pastors when thinking about your own stuff?
Well, I think the thing that I keep coming back to, and I think is very much my motivation for being part of this podcast, is that I think we just have to open up the conversation and stop acting as if we have to figure this out alone.
Yeah.
I've done a few like speaking engagements lately, and I have said to groups of clergy, like, the problem with clergy burnout is not going to be solved by getting a hobby and taking your day off. Like, we need to have a broader sense of how, like, we're working collectively to, you know, address systemic change and to minimize the degree to which people feel like it's all on their shoulders. So, like, I think the message of this podcast is, like, it's not all on your shoulders. Like, we have a lot of collective wisdom, and we need to be continuing to, like, bring that to the fore and draw from that well.
Yeah, that's good. So again, that's episode, I meant to get back and pull the episode numbers. This is early on in season 15. I can't remember the specific episode, but Kinsey Tate, look for that past episode. Next one I'm going to play here is just a couple episodes ago with Jonathan Foster. Jonathan Foster is a former Nazarene pastor who is actually, as I understand it, kicked out of the denomination for his inclusive views on LGBTQ+ folks. So the interesting, one of the things we talked about here amongst some new movements he's helping lead for clergy is just this dynamic of what happens is clergy can so often be the primary caregiver in a community, and especially with our employment being tied to that community, that we can often find ourselves without a home or a place for receiving care ourselves. So let's listen to this clip here.
We're caregivers, and then to be pushed out, you know, kicked out, in my case, officially, and lots of other places unofficially, it's a mind trip. We're also lots of us are kind of like, when you're clergy, you play like a meaning making role in your little community. So when bad things happen, you help people make meaning.
Right.
Well, what's crazy is when bad things happen, like, if it's bad enough, like, for example, in my situation, my entire meaning-making system, you know, just kind of fell apart.
Right,
so now I was
right.
trying to create meaning in the middle of chaos.
Right.
And the poor people who had to come to my church, I mean, I say poor people, some of them were really, really great and learned a lot. That's a whole interesting dynamic, too. And I think a lot of meaning-making clergy types, counselor, chaplain types are in that position, their lives personally.
So for added context here, I think I can't speak for certain here, but I know this to be true. He lost his daughter tragically 10 years ago. So I think that's part of what he's speaking about. Mm-hmm. But again, like when you're the primary caregiver, to use that language, like it can be real tough. And Martha, I don't know about you, like how have you, when you're leading in ministry, like what has been like your experience when your family, personally, whatever, is experiencing great tragedy? Like I've had times where I felt like I've been supported very well by a congregation, and other times not.
Yeah, I mean, I've been now in my congregation for 10 years, and our family has had a lot of ups and downs in those 10 years. And I give thanks to God that the church has really been the church for me in the best possible ways. I realize that's not everybody's story, but it is mine. And I, you know, I count that as one of the tremendous blessings of my ministry. I mean, it also helps that I'm in a congregation with more than one clergy person. So there is more of a sharing of the load. I think that it can sometimes be a lot harder for clergy who are in congregations where, you know, they feel for one reason or another that it does all rest on them. Mm-hmm. I found this whole episode to be extremely compelling and heartbreaking. Because again, like relatability, that I do have lots of friends and colleagues who feel sort of discarded by the church, by the institutional church. And what a tremendous thing he's doing in creating this open table network where there's kind of this safety net for for making sure that there is church for people who are leading the church and who sometimes have the war wounds to go along with navigating change and managing people's anxiety and being the ones to make meaning when everything falls apart.
Let me ask you this too, and I don't know about the judicatory structure of Anglicanism or Episcopalianism in the States, for instance, but like I know in my denomination, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, and I think there's like I'm thinking of like the UCC, other mainline denominations have similar judicatory structures, like, but especially in my context where it's like there is a middle judicatory leader, and sometimes they're in, depending on the region, there's more or less. But the person who a pastor might look to be like their primary support is also in some ways like their boss. And again, depending on you know, regional autonomy and what have you, structure like that can be more or less official. But how have you seen that navigated and the challenges of such?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things kind of get looped into the mix, right? Because in the Anglican Church, like my boss is my bishop, but also the bishop is supposed to be the pastor to the pastors. So there is that inherent conflict. And, you know, there are kind of a variety of ways in which the church tries to navigate that. But again, there's lots of people who sort of end up in the crossfires of that conflict. I'm not specifically referring to my diocese. I'm just saying like that can be a thing, right?
Yeah.
That, and I'm sure you see it in your denomination as well, that you can't necessarily say that you're in need or you're in trouble, to your boss.
Right.
Like maybe you feel you can't.
Right. Yeah. I'd have a whole lot to say there, but thankfully we don't have the time.
Okay. Maybe an episode for another day.
Yeah, maybe an episode for another day. So one of the other trends or themes of that episode was of Jonathan Foster was, again, like this new kind of credentialing ministry. I don't know what, you know, organization, institution for clergy. So I think it really, and one of the things I asked him about was this kind of like, this move societally we are towards like affinity groups, people who really agree with us and separating from those who don't. And that gets into another broader theme from this season, which is I'm titling Individualization versus Connection. Mm. So I want to play, I have a couple clips here from Ted Smith. So I want to play this first one. I think this one is kind of shorter, but let's listen in here.
This individualization that we have, it carves people out of communities.
Right.
It leaves them on their own without any kind of story to orient their lives.
Right.
And then it charges them with building all on their own an authentic self. Yeah. Well, I wonder why anxiety is so widespread. Like, that's just, it's a terrible kind of condition that a lot of people are in right now, right? And I think if what theological education is designed to do is to say, hey, you need, we're going to give you professional credentials to go lead these crumbling voluntary associations. Well, people aren't interested in that, like just like what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. But what they, but if theological education says, hey, I see this enormous challenge that you that the world has given you, that you have to put a life before God together, and you have to figure out all the, you know, what it, and there's actually learning through the centuries that can help you do that. Well, that's a different purpose for theological education.
So obviously, a lot in that episode. I do recommend that episode, recommend his book too.
I really recommend that episode. It was excellent.
Yeah, I'm so looking good at here. That's episode 172 for context here. But one of the things he references, I had said prior to that clip, you know, this this thing that, like, you know, I think a lot of younger clergy are just, we're not willing to hold up an institution and basically be crushed by the institution, A. But then B, like that individualization, I think there is this kind of societal push to just be this unique individual self, and that gets exhausting. So talk about, I mean, this dynamic, especially for churches and seminaries, but in our context, we primarily deal with churches, is like, how does a church like support the individual, but also like not perpetuate this message? Like, you need, like, your whole identity and purpose needs to be in like performing your unique self-identity. Like, you can be okay, like being part of the body of Christ. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah.
Well, it totally doesn't. You know, I don't know who this is ascribed to, but it really comes back to like, are we as a church giving good advice, or are we giving good news? I think it's like so easy to slip into having people show up and be like, okay, well, you've got to be on board with social justice, and you've got to give, and you've got to serve, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that. And like, if we don't, then the world's going to fall apart. And like, all of those things might be true and might be like important components to discipleship, but we're there primarily to proclaim the nearness of the kingdom of God. Like, we're there to proclaim, like, it's already happening. Like, God is right here and like transforming the world and recreating the world in our midst, and like and God's at work in you too. And like, that's the message that I think our world is desperate to hear. Like, you're right, maybe our world is not desperate to hold up crumbling institutions, but our world is desperate to come back to the relationship for which they're created.
Mm-hmm. I'll give a shout out here to my fellow DOC pastor and podcaster and technically a producer here. Dennis Sanders has an episode on his podcast, Church in Maine, with an interview with Anthony Robinson, the UCC pastor. And I can't remember if they reference it in this podcast or in one of the blogs that Dennis shared in the show notes from that inspired the conversation. But Anthony Robinson says something about, like, many times folks are coming to church with like a 30-pound bag, and they're being like handed another 30-pound bag and be like, hey, go out and like live the good news.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're coming way down with like 30 pounds, and like, we have them another 30-pound bag of, you know, things that are true. Like, obviously, like, there are a lot of problems in this world that I think we need to address and talk about, whether it be racism or LGBT exclusion or the violence in the Middle East. Like, these are all important issues, but like, how do we frame that in a way where people are experiencing life and good news, right?
Yeah, like, grace and transformation and hope and like, and a lifting of burdens. Like, this is a place where you can come and like, we can gather in prayer for the troubled places, and collectively we can discern our response. And like, we're not just lonely people trying to navigate a really rough world.
Yeah. Let me play one more clip here just from Ted Smith. This is a short one. It kind of fits on this trend of, again, individualization. This is him talking about this movement towards expressive or affinity group, so to speak, in denominational life.
But the challenge now is with these new, more expressive denominations, it's harder for them to want the other ones to continue to exist.
Right? Yeah,
They would like for them just to disappear, and to find any kind of common cause starts to feel really, really problematic.
So short clip there, obviously, but I can't remember if that's what we're talking about exactly, but certainly what comes to mind hearing that is this recent GMC-UMC division that's happened, you know, globally, the United Methodist Church and the Global Methodist Church. And again, I'll give a shout out to Dennis Sanders here. He talks about in the past, there was this willingness to kind of say, like, if for instance, he exemplifies like a church that might have gone through a tense vote about whether to become, in our context, open affirming, inclusive of LGBT plus persons. And often the language was like, we've got some healing to do after that vote would happen. Now it seems like, and I think this is what Ted is alluding to, is like, there's this like, hey, you know, you're the vote, people who voted against us, we're leaving you behind and we hope you fail. And I don't want to speak too strongly here, but it does seem like there's this idea that like, from the, and again, I want to speak firmly that I fully support and am grateful that folks who are LGBTQ identifying, like, they get to live into their full giftings that God has given them. But also I'm with Ted here, assuming I'm interpreting him correctly. Like, what do we do with this, like, this splintering where it's just, I'm like, almost like we want the other side to fail, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen that splintering in any number of our mainline denominations,
right,
over the past 20, 30 years. I don't know what the answer is, because it feels like in order to embrace the church that I believe God is calling us to be, like, we do have to take a stance on these things. And it's hard to see in how we do that without there being a vote that ends up with. Now, I know in our Indigenous circles, our Indigenous Anglican circles, there's a much different way of coming to decision making. I think that there's something to pay attention to there in terms of like maybe bringing it to a vote on the floor of synod is not the way forward.
Sure.
I don't, like, what do you think? What do you think we do other than like,
well,
the alternative is not to take a stand, right? Like,
I think this is where I'm going to lean on Dennis, what I've read from Dennis Sanders here and what I've heard from him. It's just this, I think it has to be like, because I would agree with you, like, I think there are times where you have to say like, hey, this is what I believe. So I think that kind of, to use the family systems term, self-differentiation is important. But again, this is where I'm going to lean into family systems theory. Like, there has to be a balance of emotional connection and self-differentiation, because I've had Jack Chatham on the past, and he says something like, I think, like, you know, going fully after self-differentiation is kind of like a narcissistic behavior. And then obviously, like, you know, just completely caving in to, you know, emotional connection at all times, you know, that's not a healthy object either. So to go back to what Dennis Sinner says is like seeking healing, and that's far easier said than done. So I want to acknowledge that. But I just wonder, like, how different things would be, and maybe they wouldn't be. But if, is it possible to go into such divisive trends with an attitude toward healing or seeking healing, and striving to maintain? This is something that, you know, Jonathan and I talked about in that episode with Jonathan Foster, like this tension between two things of self-differentiation and emotional connection, trying to live in that tension, that balance.
Yeah. And I mean, at the risk of sounding trite, like I would hope that ultimately being able to trust in the reconciling power of God does allow us to have really challenging discussions that feel like are wounding. But that they're, you look at a lot of the things that Christians have fought about over the centuries, and they do come to feel like small potatoes.
Yeah.
There is a healing that does take place over the course of time that I have to believe God's hand is in.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. That's hopeful. I appreciate that. You're bringing that perspective. Let's move on here, since we're still great clips here I got to share. So I want to set early on in January, again, this was actually recorded prior to, but Dr. Scott Thema spoke at the Remind and Renew conference at Phillips Seminary. So I kind of spoke to him about his work, and he shared about just kind of the challenges. This is more practically speaking, individualism versus connection, how to connect with virtual audiences and bring them into the wider life of the church here.
They're willing to allow for talking head spectator participation, but that's not a robust congregational life. So I think where congregations, and this includes the megachurches as well, are challenged now is, how do we deliver all those other aspects of congregational life to a virtual audience so that it's a robust expression of Christianity and community, and not just, you know, I'm watching televangelists, you know, who are less good televangelists.
Right. So this is episode 160, I think. And this really connects with your conversation with Michael Graham, which was 158, I believe. Because I remember you had a very similar conversation with Michael Graham where he said, like, hey, like, church should be getting away from live streaming because it detracts from the gathered community in person. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of churches that are going to choose to stick with live streaming. But what do you think about, like, that dynamic? Because, again, there is this kind of, like, there's a safe kind of aloof, that's not the right word, aloofness, but there's this ability to not fully engage or connect, I guess, when you're watching. You know, I'd love to do this like in person with you, Martha, and I've found that, you know, I've been able to do more and more interviews in person, and how much more I appreciate doing those interviews in person where I can. So you're living this out like right now, obviously, as a local parish pastor. And you're talking to other pastors about this. Like, what do you think about this dynamic of trying to get people moved into physical community?
Well, I tell you, I think about it a lot because, like, I am very compelled by what these people are saying. You know, Ryan Panzer has a lot to say about the holy and the hybrid, like, and I know we're going to talk about Jake Kim, is that his name?
Yeah.
There is an incarnational embodied aspect to our faith that that can't be shortchanged. And at the same time, like, live streaming online ministry is so baked into the life of our church anyway, and has been from way before the pandemic. So, like, I just can't, I can't imagine, like, ejecting it from the life of our community, because it is experienced as a lifeline for so many people who can't come to church or who are isolated for one reason or another. Is it also a way in which people kind of bop around in church shop rather than become part of the community? It is. But at the same time, I'm always surprised by the, when I connect with people who only connect online, I'm surprised by their experience of it, mm-hmm. and then how that kind of feeds their embodied living. So I guess I ultimately trust in the power of the Holy Spirit to do something our circumstances that are sometimes less than ideal. And I think that we have to be taking seriously that continual calling to the life of community, rather than consumerism. Like, I think we have to be clear about that. But for me and our community anyway, like, it is here to stay.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in right into that J. Kim clip you referenced, because you use the word consumerism. He talks about the dangers of seeing church as a product. So let's listen to that real quick.
What we are unintentionally doing is teaching people and telling people, hey, you know what the church is? The church is just a Christian product to be consumed. It's just good Christian content to be consumed.
Right.
And listen, I am not against good Christian content. This podcast is good Christian content.
I paid Jay to say that there.
So I'm not against that, but you and I both would agree this podcast is not the church.
Right.
This podcast is not. Now, you and I, as brothers in the family of God, we make up a part of the church global, you know, universal. But the podcast itself is not the church.
So some almost hot takes there, right? And that's episode 162 there. But yes, you were just talking about consumerism. And J. Kim talks right about this tendency, and I think we do it as pastors, is to try to create a good product.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to say, is like, this leads me right back to where we started in this podcast around clergy health, because
good point.
We are absolutely, like, we are formed as pastors to be content creators. Mm-hmm. We're formed as pastors to be entrepreneurs and in some way to kind of be competitors for increasingly scarce resources, which are the people who are interested in organized religion, right? Like, and so I think what J. Kim is saying absolutely speaks to the heart of, like, what we need to keep coming back to as Christians in today's society. We need to resist that message that we're entrepreneurs competing for scarce resources. We need to resist the idea that we're content creators producing a great Christian product, because the temptations are everywhere to buy into that idea. And, like, the rewards for being a successful Christian product feel pretty enticing.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Well, I'm thinking back to something you said just a moment ago about, you know, trusting God to bring reconciliation. Similarly, right? So much of this work, and I'll give a shout out here to my favorite Andrew Root, who writes a lot about this too, is just trusting God. So thank you just for mentioning that again, because it's so easy to get into this, like, what do I have to do to fix it, right?
Yeah, what do I have to do? Yeah, honestly, like, almost every clip that we've listened to so far today makes me think of something Andrew Root has said, because, like, it's, I think about that all the time. Like, we're focused on the wrong problem.
Yeah.
We're focused on trying to get people to come to church, and we should be focused on how we communicate the living God to a world that has been taught to be individual secular people.
Yeah. I have a, for listeners, I think that's back in season 14, my last episode with Andrew Root, but you can check that out. Let's shift here, because you use the word fix, and I'm thinking about so much of this involves leading change. So much of this work involves leading change in our churches. And this was from, I forgot to look it up, Doug Poe. It's right before the Ted Smith episode. So this is a conversation with Doug Poe, who co-wrote Sustaining While Disrupting, which is, again, a book I highly recommend. Let's see if I can find it here. But he talks about the dangers of the quick fix. And let's listen in here.
These are not quick fixes. I mean, and that's the piece that I'm trying to get to. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and say, I'm putting aside, I'm going to do this. I mean, these things take place over a long period of time where people say, you know what? I do see this differently and realize that this probably was not as critical as we thought it was before. So going to your question, like I said, I don't think we should undermine anyone's convictions, but I do think that over time, many of these things do change for individuals. I mean, you have individuals today who...
I cut that off there a little short, but the context of that conversation is he's talking about the section in their book, which is about change. And he uses the example of Peter and Cornelius and Peter literally, you know, setting aside some convictions. You know, again, I don't eat whatever, I don't remember right, but, I don't eat certain things. But I think the thing we... and maybe I should say me, because I know I'm terrible at this, is this idea like, I know there needs to be change, and that sometimes people need to set things aside, but I'm like, I want it to happen right away. And expecting that quick fix. And I know part of that's cultural, in our current cultural context. I know part of that is just frankly, like, realistically, like, right, when we see like the financials going down and declining attendance, we think like something needs to happen immediately. But what do you think? What have been your experience?
Well, I think that it's hard to be a couple of decades into ministry and believe in quick fixes anymore.
Oh, there you go.
Like, I think that
is that like a young clergy problem then?
Yeah, like. I think it's just like an institution wanting to survive problem, because we do keep getting like the magic bullet answers. Mm-hmm. Like, they keep being floated across our desks, right? Like, we gather for like professional development, and it's like, okay, here's the way to do it. Like, you just need X, Y, and Z, and it's all going to be all right. You just need like this package. You just need this language. You just need this kind of worship. And none of it really seems to be particularly moving the dial in, if we're looking at the dial being reversing decline of religion, like of how many people want to be part of institutional religion. So I think the antidote to quick fixes is to be really clear about discernment and like where God is leading us in this time for these people.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I had to write that down, that an institution wanting to survive problem, because that's good. That's good. And boy, is that truth. Holy smokes.
It's true. And I get it. Like,
right.
I love this church. We both do, right? That's why we're
too
doing
much.
This. Like, we too much. We love the church. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's play here. This comes from Tessa Pinkstaff, who was a co-author on the book. Where is it? Leading, trying to find the book title. I can't find it.
Just out.
Just
this
out.
Week.
So it's it's just before will be the Brian McLaren episode. So and then so it's two episodes back from
How
this.
How to Lead Faithful Innovation.
Yeah, so, yeah. Or the book is Leading Faithful Innovation. That thank you. That reminds.
Yeah.
But she talks about. I asked her the question, like, how do you, there are going to be times where folks are just not going to play ball, to use the sports metaphor. And how do you deal with folks who are just convinced that their job is to not move, to not play along, to just be a stick in the mud. So let me play that her clip here.
Yeah. We allude to this a little bit in the book, and it was part of the process that we had when we were working with the congregations, but some of what we proposed was finding the core leaders that are in your congregation who are ready for this kind of work. We sure. had guiding teams that the congregations assembled, and that was, it was sort of a ripple effect. It starts with the core group that's ready. And then as that work is flourishing, as the word gets out, as people start talking about this, sort of has a grassroots ripple where other people see, oh, there's something happening here. The movement of the Spirit is going on here. People are excited. Change is taking place. And it's in some ways, that's the basics of discipleship. People see that something interesting is happening in this pocket of the church, and others want to get involved, and it just grows from there. There will be people, I want to acknowledge that, and we acknowledge this in the book, there will be people for whom this journey is too difficult. Hmm. And there's sort of a blessing of, we see you, we know that this isn't what you need, we're going to keep moving, we still care about you. It's an important thing to do, but it is, you have to acknowledge that not everyone's going to be able to do this. And God will take care of the people that we have to sort of leave by the wayside as we keep moving forward.
So that seems pretty strong, right? And I don't think she means that negatively, leaving by the wayside. But what has been your experience? What have you advised pastors when clearly there's people in a congregation who just are not willing to grow and change and respond to the Spirit's promptings?
Yeah, I think that there were kind of two key things for me when I first came to the church I'm currently serving. And I was a 35-year-old woman. I was the first female rector, like the first lead priest that they had that was a woman. Mm-hmm. And everybody felt like there's too much changing all at once. So there was a lot of pushback. And there were kind of two things that happened that were extremely helpful. The one was, somebody just saying basically what Tessa said, like, put most of your energy toward the people who want to get on board with this. And lo and behold, there are lots of people who want to get on board with this. And so really, like, nurture their faith and, like, build them up. And it's so easy, you know, as a teacher to put all of your energy into managing the kids who are a problem and the kids who are, like, there to learn get nothing, right? So, like, so directing of energy, totally get what Tess is saying. But then the other piece, I was going to visit this elderly woman in the congregation, and her son, God bless him, reached out to me before I went and said, look, before you go to see my mom, I'm just going to give you a piece of advice. Like, she doesn't like you. Like, she thinks that women shouldn't be priests. Mm-hmm. And, like, she thinks that you're changing too many things. He said, like, you're going to be tempted to try to talk her out of how she feels. But just listen to her. Like, don't try to convince her otherwise. Like, just say, yeah, I really hear you. And, like, like, validate, right? In therapy language, validate. I ended up having, like, the best relationship with this woman. And if he hadn't have emailed me, I would have gone in and tried to, like, because in my mind, it's just, like, clear in my mind what we need to do and why this is, like, the right way forward. And if she can see things as clearly as I see them, of course she's going to get on board. Well, she wasn't going to get on board because I'm convincing, but she actually did get on board because I listened to her.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lesson there.
It was huge. It was really huge. Yeah.
I'm thinking again about, I'm trying to write this down. She got on board because you listened. I'm thinking again about my guy, Jack Tatama, who I love to listen to, talks about family systems theory. He tells a story about when he was at a church, he brought a change to like their Christmas Eve service, and he kind of put it out there. We're going to do something different for Christmas Eve this year. Like, people threw a fit. One woman in particular threw a fit. So he went over there rather than like trying to defend what he was going to do. He just listened to her. And it turned out like her daughter, I think it was, like, had tragically passed away. So it wasn't so much about like the Christmas Eve service and the structure of that service. It was, she had so much emotional baggage, so much emotional pain around that time mm-hmm. of year, that another change just felt like too much. And her being listened to really changed things. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's sort of the other piece in all of this, is that it's probably mostly not about you.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost mostly not about you.
Well, I feel like that goes back to our Kinsey Tate clip, right? Like, we all got our stuff, and it's not about us, but we also process it like it's about us.
Yeah.
Pastors, so check out Kinsey Tate. I'll tell her she owes me for this, but... She's doing good stuff there. Let's do two more here. I guess the last one here. This actually comes from your winter season.
Yeah.
And this is too good of a clip not to play. So obviously, leadership is a tricky thing. And let's just play this. This is from Martha's interview over the winter. I can't remember which number this is, but this is around the 155 episode number with Justin Lewis Anthony. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, he's against the model of leadership. And we might feel differently, or at least critique some elements, but he does have some intriguing points to play here. And this one is especially speaks to it. Let's listen in.
Interesting side question. Why don't they have leadership studies in Germany? Because do you know what the German word for leader is?
Führer.
There you go. It's really hard to have leadership studies when the model of leadership is the Führer.
Oh my gosh.
Hitler wasn't the first Führer. There were people who were constantly looking for the Führer. Like, you know, the English look for King Arthur. And Bonhoeffer would have been the perfect candidate for it. I mean, he was tall, he was good looking, he was blonde, he was charismatic, he was musical, he played Bach like Bach, he was a fantastic tennis player, he was really good company, and he was morally scrupulous. And he refused to take on the role that that he could have easily taken on. To go back to the Lord of the Rings metaphor, he refused to take the One Ring. He was basically Faramir and not Boromir.
Yeah.
I am not that well versed in Lord of the Rings to remember that little who those two people are, but what he talks about, what Justin talks about in that clip, I think is really compelling, because especially, I don't know what it's like up in Canada, Martha, but we're certainly seeing this dynamic in the States, you know, as the run up here to another election, and so many people are really obsessed with Donald Trump and his kind of just authoritative leadership. Mm-hmm. There is so much of this tension, this appeal, this lust, this temptation to become this kind of, because I think that, I don't know, like, I think there is some kind of like sinful element, if I can use that word, of humanity, that we kind of want this kind of like, tell me everything, I'll follow you, when, like, right, I think we'd say like we should follow Jesus.
Yeah.
How do we balance that tension as church leaders?
Like, Justin has some real mic drop moments
right. In
that interview. And like you say, it's hard to throw out the whole model of leadership, because we're formed every step of the way to be Christian leaders. Like, this podcast is about
right
Christian leadership in so many ways. And yet, at the same time, I think what he's saying fundamentally is like, we have to interrogate that tendency, well, like that Messiah complex that we can wear as Christian leaders too easily and that people can put on us, as well as, like you say, that like deep desire to have somebody just save us.
Yes. Right? Like, yes. Yes.
Like we want somebody to show up and save our churches. Mm-hmm. We want somebody to show up and save our country. I mean, that's what the MAGA like motto speaks to, right? Like, is that desire to be saved. And thankfully, like in the church anyway, we do have a savior. We can forget that. So like we have to keep coming back to it. We have to keep repenting, really. Like we have to keep being called back to who the actual Messiah is. And like, spoiler alert, it's neither one of us or anybody else listening to this podcast.
Yeah. Well, this is good stuff. Any other thoughts you want to share about the last season here?
I mean, I just love that we have a chance to do this because I do see how interconnected all of this is. I mean, everything that we heard in that last clip is certainly not unrelated to all of the pieces that we talked about around, you know, that consumer model and that kind of capitalistic model that we can get locked into as churches as well. And I think just giving an opportunity for these really wise voices that you keep bringing into this podcast to speak to one another as well is like really important, to see the unique perspectives that each guest is bringing, but then also to see those common denominators that keep rising to the surface.
Yeah, thank you. So why don't we give a teaser here for your upcoming summer season? Share about some of the interviews and conversations you're working on, or in some cases have already completed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about the conversations that I've had so far. There's some really interesting conversations about the importance of the small and the local in the life of the church. There's a conversation with someone who doesn't give us those magic bullets, but has done some research into some of the common denominators across flourishing mainline churches, which I think is of interest to a lot of our audience. Talked to some people here in my neck of the woods in Canada and some people across the pond and some people in the States. There's a few other conversations around clergy, burnout, and wellness. And I am working on securing an interview that I'm really excited about with a particular hero of mine. So if any of our audience wants to just say a prayer for me that I'm actually able to get that to materialize, I would appreciate those prayers because it's a conversation I would just love to share with our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Martha, for this conversation. Let's just each kind of give our shout out here. So shameless, well, for honest ask, let's say this, right? Honest ask. It really helps to support our work here together. If you can subscribe, review, share this with a friend. Martha, what am I forgetting?
Yeah, like those reviews are the number one way to help Future Christian reach more people. And we say that not as people who are really interested in getting the greatest market share, but as people who really care about the life of our church and want this conversation to be as wide and deep as possible.
Yeah. Thanks for adding that. Well, again, we always leave folks with a word of peace. So Martha, may God's peace be with you.
And may God's peace be with you also.
Amen.
Thanks for joining us on the Future Christian Podcast. To learn more about Lauren or the podcast, visit future-christian.com. One more thing before you go. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast. And if you're feeling especially generous, leave a review. It really helps us get the word out to more people about the podcast. The Future Christian Podcast is a production of Torn Curtain Arts and Resonate Media. Our episodes were mixed by Danny Burton, and the production support is provided by Paul Romig-Levitt. Thanks, and go in peace.